I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 179 for the weekend starting 9 June 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the new look Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, the Constitutional Court judgment on digital TV.
Also this week, NTT said to mull Didata Africa sale, Telkom to get a new name, Telkom again to boost DSL to 100 megs a second, and Apple's $5,000 iMac Pro.
Oh, I want it so badly. Time to earn those dollars to afford that beast.
Well, welcome to the podcast. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. We're recording on a Sunday morning at our respective homes. Just because we ran out of time on Friday.
We can make use of the fiber now. So
we can, yeah. And the line is sounding good, so we're doing our recording via Skype this week. And, lots to talk about. Man, it's been a busy week.
Oh, yes.
And I don't think we were even going to touch on the Gupta emails this week, which was really the big news story, I think, generally. But lots happening in the tech space as well. And lots happening with our podcast. Two great podcasts this week. If you missed them, I'd recommend going back and having listened to them. We had an interview with Duncan Simpson-Crabe, who is the CEO of Wireless Business Solutions, which has just been renamed. I won't say to what yet because it's one of our quiz questions this week. And that's a really interesting discussion about the network they're rolling out, why they changed their name, how they're trying to position themselves competitively in the marketplace with their new wireless broadband network. Interesting discussion with Duncan. And then David Kahn, who, of course, is the founder and CEO of Mustek. Had a great chat with him earlier in the week, looking back at 30 years of Mustek. They're 30 years old this year. He founded it back in 1987, talking about how he broke into the PC industry, built an early lead in this market thanks to sanctions relative to the big international companies, how he built a local assembly PC assembly business, and how the Mustek business has expanded over the years. So really interesting chat with David, who's really a one of the stalwarts, I suppose I could describe him, in the local ICT industry. So good to check both of those podcasts. I'd recommend going to have a listen to them. But before we get into the news this week, let's do our quiz. Richard, do you want to kick off with the first question?
Definitely. The first question, which two companies bought into Stellenbosch InfoSec company Intersect this week?
Our second question is, I'll take a slug of coffee. iBurst and Broadlink parent WBS has a new name. What is it?
And the third question, the answer to question two is building a wireless broadband network using which technology?
Fourth question, which telecommunications operator is, and I'm sure you watched it last night, is the new headline sponsor of the Springboks? And they won their game. And for a bonus point, what is the sponsorship period? We're looking for the number of years.
And the final question, Apple has unveiled a new smart speaker for the home. What is it called?
And we'll talk about that during the show today. So lots in the news to talk about this week. I think the big story, the really big story, was the Constitutional Court judgment, which we'd all been waiting for, handed down on Thursday. And that judgment really could have gone either way. In the end, the Concord judges were divided themselves on the issue, but ultimately it came down to a majority judgment. It found in favor of the former communications minister, Faith Mutambi, and found that she, in fact, lawfully changed the broadcast digital migration policy in 2015 to exclude encryption in government-subsidized set-top boxes. So, you know, this battle, we know, Richard, this battle's been going on for many years.
For years
and years through the court system. ETV won an appeal at the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein, I think in 2014 or 2015, I think it was, no, sorry, it was 2016. And the minister then took that on review at the Constitutional Court, and she was supported in her application by MultiChoice and the SABC. And ETV was supported by Media Monitoring Africa, I think, and SOS, Save Our SABC Coalition. ETV lost, and the minister won the judgment, finding that there should be no encryption in these set-top boxes. Unfortunately, this is not the end of the story. I think a lot of people were hoping that once the Concord handed down judgment, we would just simply get on with the process of digital migration, and that would be the end of it. But we have a new minister now of communications, Ayanda Dlodlo, who told Parliament a couple of weeks ago that she wants to reverse Faith Mutambi's reversal of the earlier policy and go back to encryption in the set-top boxes. So it's unclear where we're going now. It's unclear from the judgment whether she can change the policy. My interpretation as a non-legal expert is that she can. Listening to an interview she did on the radio the other day, I think it was on the morning show on 702, she hinted very strongly that she is very much in favor of encryption and that this is the ANC policy on the issue, and therefore she's going to implement ANC policy on the issue. So it appears that she's likely to reverse the encryption decision, which I personally believe is a mistake through my analysis of the situation. Mm. What does this mean? Does it mean we get a further legal challenge from MultiChoice or someone else? Certainly the person who was very much against encryption, the idea of encryption at the SABC, is no longer there, and that's Claudia Motsoeneng. MultiChoice obviously still has a strong view on this. In fact, they put out a statement this week saying that this is a victory for them and for those in the anti-encryption lobby. But I think that may be wishful thinking given what the new minister has said. So I think it looks likely now that we're going to go back to the policy that was developed by Yunus Karim or something similar. Probably has to be approved once again by cabinet. Now the big worry is that MultiChoice is now going to say, well, the Constitutional Court found in favour of Faith Mutambi. Maybe we need to move ahead with this policy and not try and amend it once again and go back to the previous minister's policy. And there's a possibility that she might, or that the company may then say, well, let's take this back on review at the High Court. And, the risk then of the going through that whole process again of the High Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Constitutional Court. Maybe MultiChoice is tired of the litigation. Maybe it just goes ahead now, but this is far from over, unfortunately.
I can't help but think how much time and money is being wasted on something so important that should really have a black and white answer, yes and no. Like it should be straightforward. It's very sad to see, but it's a little bit frustrating to just to see that we have to go back and fight this again.
I mean, the problem is that the ANC is divided on the issue, and that depending on who the minister is, and we know Zuma chops and changes his ministers depending on the time of the day. Yeah. Depending on who the minister is, there's a different view on the subject. I think Dlodlo is right in that it is official ANC policy, and that was they came up with that at an ANC conference. I think it was at Mangaung back in 2015 or 2014 even. And certainly it appeared that Faith Mutambi was making decisions that flew in the face of ANC policy. From that respect, I suppose she's politically correct in doing this. I still maintain that that encryption is anti-poor and
It's not for the people.
No, it'll benefit the broadcaster more than it does the end user. In terms of the costs, the fact that you're going to have one of these decoders in perpetuity if you want to watch terrestrial television. But be that as it may, I think this matter is far from finished. But Parliament is having a joint hearing of the portfolio committees on communications and telecommunications and postal services on the 20th of June, and we're expecting the minister to make some further announcements or provide some more clarity on what her thinking is around this issue during that joint sitting. So we're looking at just over a week and a half from now We should have some more clarity on what the government is thinking around this is and how we're going to go forward on digital TV. But let's hope whatever gets decided that that it doesn't get taken on review again at the High Court.
I don't think we can afford to waste more time on this, especially considering, you know, with every year that goes past with this kind of issue lingering, you know, streaming and mobile broadband is just getting a stronger foothold. You know, it's not helping the poor, but it's becoming, you know, kind of the only way for people to start consuming certain media types. And once terrestrial television becomes another burden, you know, where do you go to? Mobile first, probably.
Well, that's the irony of this whole thing is that, you know, the quicker we can get the digital dividend bands in the hands of the mobile operators, the bigger the impact on the broadcasting sector. And the faster the shift away from linear terrestrial broadcasting to online on-demand entertainment. So a very interesting piece on Bloomberg on Friday suggesting that Dimension Data Middle East and Africa may be for sale. Of course, that includes the Dai Data operations in the region as well as internet solutions. Now, Bloomberg's reporting that that NTT, which is the company that obviously bought Dimension Data, I think for a 24 billion rand deal several years ago, I forget exactly when it happened. I think it was about 5 or 6 years back now, suggesting that they're looking to offload their African operations. I've spoken to sources at Dimension Data who say that this is complete rubbish, that it's not happening at all. So Bloomberg quoting three unnamed sources saying that this is that NTT is canvassing the market for potential bidders for this business. So interesting speculation, but certainly the people I've spoken to inside Dimension Data say it's absolutely not true and it's not happening. But it could be interesting. I mean, Bloomberg suggesting that what's happening is that management is potentially looking to do an MBO of the local business and then to relist it on the stock market. Dai Data obviously was delisted from the JSE and the LSE, for that matter, London Stock Exchange, when the NTT deal happened. So it'd be interesting to see Dai Data coming back to market, but possibly in this region. Speculation then that might be exactly what's happening, although my sources are telling me that this is not happening, so we'll have to see what happens.
Look, the corporate tie line usually is deny until, or, you know, you just don't acknowledge it until it's been announced.
That's true, but, you know, I'm speaking to sources who would tell me behind the scenes that this is what's happening, and, you know, not talking to people for an on-the-record quote or anything, and they're telling me off the record, behind the scenes, nothing's happening.
Interesting stuff.
But there's been a lot of speculation about corporate action involving Dimension Data lately. And certainly they've shown themselves to be capable of doing it. I mean, we saw the MWeb acquisition recently, which was really interesting. And then I heard some speculation that they were potentially interested in having a look at Terraco. Again, my sources said that just simply wasn't the case. And then subsequent to that, I heard rumors that they were looking at Dark Fiber Africa. As a potential acquisition. Dark Fiber Africa was going through a funding round. They've subsequently announced that they've successfully raised, I think it was 1.2 billion rand in new funding for network rollout, etc. So I guess that speculation probably arose from them looking at the markets and, you know, looking for potential source of funders. And I guess there were some companies sniffing around, and Internet Solutions or Dimension Data may have been one of those. So there was probably something to that one. But certainly the company is actively looking around the market. It's clear that they've got an appetite to do something.
Oh, yeah, and it definitely seems that they've also done a refresh across their online kind of look and feel. So there's definitely some movement happening behind the scenes there.
They're definitely doing stuff, yeah. And, of course, Internet Solutions just this week announcing that they've launched CloudWAN, which is an SD-WAN service, a software-defined wide area network technology. It's really delivering WAN or wide area networking as a service, pretty much like you buy software as a service today on the internet. The idea is that it becomes much more easy to manage your corporate WAN, your remote branches and that sort of thing as a service rather than as a going out there and deploying specific routers and all this sort of stuff. You kind of buy it as a service. It's a really interesting, I'm simplifying that terribly, but it's an interesting move here. And But this rumor about corporate action involving Dimension Data, one way or the other, either if it's NTT possibly selling the local operations or the local operations possibly making acquisitions, there certainly must be some discussions going on in the background that's stoking all this speculation and talk in the market. Certainly, I think the Terraco stuff was probably not true, but I think there was probably something to the DFA rumors. And there may be something to this NTT looking to sell off its African operations, but certainly the people I'm speaking to say it's not happening. We'll have to see. Right, I think we need to take an ad break. Rehot, we'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox Fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So Skype is holding out quite well. We had some issues a bit earlier in the show with some noise. I hope it doesn't come through too badly during the podcast, but we've redialed our Skype now, and the problem seems to have cleared up, so it must have been a Skype issue. So Telkom, believe it or not, is getting a new name.
What? That's almost sacrilege, isn't it?
Certainly a name that's been in the market. When did the Telkom name emerge? It must have been in the early 90s, if not earlier.
Yeah, I remember the campaign they did when they changed that keypad logo design back in the 90s, I think it was.
Changed to the keypad logo.
To the keypad. Or yeah. Changed away from the T that they had to this weird keypad logo.
Because they ditched the keypad logo a couple of years ago now. Which was long overdue, because I mean, really. I quite like the Telkom logo now, actually, just a plain blue Telkom, white on blue background. They're going to be changing the name, but there's a reason for this. The Telkom brand is still going to be in the market. It's going to be the consumer facing retail telecommunications brand that serves small and medium enterprises as well as the home user. So from that point of view, the Telkom name is not disappearing. But what's happening is the head office name is going to change, because they're restructuring into what the CEO, Sipho Maseko, says is a Remgro-style corporate holding entity. They haven't got a new name for it yet. They're busy working on that. But it's going to hold a range of disparate assets. We'll have a story up on this on Tech Central a bit later this morning, Sunday morning. They're going to have five subsidiaries to this business to start. They're going to have Telkom. I'm trying to remember all these because I don't have the story in front of me. Telkom, they're going to have BCX, which will be their business-focused brand, which is the merger of Business Connection and Telkom Business. And then they're going to have Trudon, which I think is the old directory business, Yellow Pages and that sort of thing.
Sure, well, that still exists.
It does, but Trudon has been completely turned on its head. It's now being reinvented as an e-commerce player. And they've launching a whole lot of e-commerce properties, some quite interesting stuff, including a price comparison website. So Trudon is the old directory business, but they've completely reinvented themselves or in the process of doing so. How many is that? That's three. I am going to miss one, aren't I? Of course, there's OpenServe, which was the retail arm, which was spun off, I think, back in 2015. OpenServe, kind of like the UK model where you've got BT OpenReach, which was spun out. That was a regulatory thing that was forced on BT in the UK. Telkom, interestingly enough, did it voluntarily. So they've got that wholesale arm, which now is really at arm's length from the Telkom retail and is meant to serve the market equally, all ISPs equally. And they're responsible really for building the Telkom network, the mobile network and the fixed line infrastructure. And they're the guys whose vans you see in the street, etc. And then the last component is a new business called Gyro, G-Y-R-O. And that's going to house all of Telkom's property assets. So all of its telephone exchanges, its base stations and towers, all of its land. And it's got a huge amount of land around South Africa. All of that is going to get housed in this property management company called Gyro, which Sipho Maseko says he wants managed like another any other property management company, like Redefine Properties, for example, or Growth Point. And he wants it to compete with those companies. And so we're going to have five subsidiary companies to the new Telkom Corporate, which will have a new name, so not Telkom. So very, very interesting, quite radical restructuring of the group. And I would assume at some point, perhaps when there's a less left-wing government in power in South Africa, that once all of this is done, it'll be quite easy to privatize some of those assets, like property management, for example. Perhaps you could float that on the stock market. I don't know about the other businesses, but certainly, I mean, maybe Trudon at some point, if it builds a powerful e-commerce business, maybe that also could be floated separately. There's no word yet on any plans to list any of these businesses, but maybe down the line, it would make sense to float them on a stock market, or even potentially to sell them off if they get the right offer from someone.
Yeah, those businesses have the potential to make some money.
Yeah. But what's really interesting about this is how it almost flies in the face of what the big telecommunications operators in this country have historically done. Certainly the likes of MTN and Vodacom, which have always sought to build, I know it's a bit of jargon, but they've always sought to build these vertically integrated companies that do everything from top to bottom. Effectively what he's doing here with Telkom is he's doing the opposite of that. He's almost delayering it. And creating these separate entities that are separate from each other. Because what he wants to do is he wants to be able to encourage the property company, for example, to be able to do deals without the telecommunications arm of the company saying, oh, you know, you can't do that because it's against our interests in the telecommunications market. So in essence, what could happen now is Gyro, the property company, could say, well, yeah, we've got all the space in our telephone exchanges. Hey, Vumatel, do you want to come and co-locate some of your equipment in our telephone exchanges? We'll lease you some space. Or, Cell C, we've got all these high sites around the country. Do you want to lease some space on our towers? I know we see you need some more coverage in these areas, so you're welcome to use our infrastructure. Now, in the past, the telecommunications arm of the business would have said, hey, whoa, no, we can't do this. This is going to hurt our business. And so the property side of the company couldn't monetize its assets properly. So the idea now is that with these things as separate entities within the organization, with their own profit and loss accounts, they'll be able to make the decisions that are in their best interests, not in the best interests of another arm of the organization. It's an interesting move. And I asked him whether this has been done anywhere else in the world. And he said that apparently it's happened in New Zealand. The New Zealand operator has gone through a similar delayering, and apparently in the US some of the operators there have looked at this as well. So it's certainly a big bold move by Telkom, meant to unlock shareholder value, that old hoary chestnut, if you like. it probably will, but I suppose for the average consumer out there, the question is, what does this actually mean for my Telkom service at the end of the day? Is that OpenServe guy going to pitch up any quicker than he does at the moment to fix my line when it goes down? I suppose it could be argued that a lot of this is focused at a corporate restructuring level, when a lot of the work still needs to be done at the actual operational level inside Telkom, in terms of delivering service to customers. So while it may end up being very positive for shareholders of the company, Telkom still needs to fix its customer service.
Oh, yeah. Look, I think it can only be a good move. We haven't seen anything this drastic coming from them. And I think this is going to be a move for the better, especially if you can, I guess, micromanage some of those services a bit better. And especially the guys on the ground, you know, if they don't have to serve as part of a massive organization, but rather a smaller company that's very tightly organized, become a competitive player, it can be very good for consumers.
Yeah, if you're a lean, I mean, I guess, you know, you've got to have the corporate structure right before you can, learn to walk before you can run, I suppose is the phrase. And having the right corporate structure in place would certainly help that. And certainly these companies are facing increased competition, and they need to be more nimble, and they need to be able to make decisions on the fly. And not having to worry about what another arm of the company might think of this, would certainly empower them, I think, to make those decisions much more quickly. It looks positive to me as well. But Telkom wasn't in the news this week for restructuring only. I think the other thing that really caught people's attention was something that Sipho Maseko announced during the course of the presentation on Monday, which was at BCX's offices in Midrand, was that they are going to be introducing 100 megabit per second over copper DSL.
Sounds very nice.
They're going to be using a technology called GFast, which is a DSL, quite a new DSL technology. It goes way beyond VDSL, which is the other technology that Telkom has deployed in the market to try and improve speeds over its legacy copper infrastructure. Now, they're talking about 100 megs a second on the downlink. I'm not sure how fast it will be on the uplink. But there are a number of caveats here. This is over very short loop lengths. So we're not talking about 5 kilometers to your local exchange. Loop lengths in South Africa are a big problem. You know, they're very long to other markets. But what Telkom has been doing over the last few years is they've been shortening the length of those local loops. So a lot of the trenching you've seen in the streets hasn't been for fiber to the home specifically, but has been OpenServe looking to shorten those loops by pulling fiber through the streets into the cabinet boxes you see around those little green Telkom boxes. Some of them are white on street corners. And so in effect, what's happening is that those have fiber into them, so the loop length is much shorter into your house. It's no longer copper all the way from your house to the exchange. It's now copper from your house to the junction box on the corner, the distribution box, I think they're called. And so this is allowing them now to look at faster technologies. VDSL in particular, they were able to introduce because of that that rollout, and also the deployment of those MSAN boxes, those big white Telkom boxes, which can be used for both copper and fiber to the home. So what they're doing now is deploying this GFast technology. It's only really going to be deployed in places like blocks of flats, in housing estates, complexes, that sort of thing. The idea then is that they actually build a some sort of distribution box or little server room inside the complex or inside the block of flats, and from there they distribute over the existing copper wire infrastructure over the last few hundred meters into people's homes. So this is not something, if you live in a big leafy suburb like Bryanston in Johannesburg, for example, in a standalone house, this technology is not going to be for you. This is going to be for high density housing and for people living inside complexes, for example, where they can actually deploy their little server room or whatever you call it, their distribution room, in an area inside a housing estate or a block of flats, for example, and then distribute the last couple of hundred meters over copper, because GFast is not suited to distances of longer than about 500 meters. So it's not going to be for everyone, but in areas, for example, where they've got an issue with a body corporate saying, over our dead bodies, are you coming to trench our complex? Luckily, the residents bought into the idea of trenching the complex and putting in fiber wall boxes and that sort of thing. And it was a very disruptive process that took over a month. Luckily, I sold them on it quite aggressively, and so it was successful, and we have fiber. But I know there are many complexes where maybe only one or two people are interested in getting a really high speed solution, and the body corporate says, well, no, this is going to be too disruptive. So what Telkom is saying now, this is a potential solution for that, because what we can do is all we have to do is deploy our infrastructure, say at the main gate, and from there we'll continue to distribute over the existing copper inside your complex. They're then able to deliver up to 100 megabit per second over DSL technology, using this GFast technology, without incurring the cost, first of all, or also incurring the wrath of the residents as they trench through the complex, or even worse, do aerial fiber, which is really unsightly.
Yeah, this is a fantastic idea. I really wish they did it sooner. I mean, I remember 2 years ago when I was eager for faster internet, only at 8 meg at the time. VDSL was just down the road, but they couldn't deploy it fast enough. And this in the suburbs, I mean, I understand high density, yes, perfect solution. But even in suburbs, this could have been such a great alternative to DSL, or even as a great competitor to fiber. Because it seems that, you know, you only need to deploy one or two of those boxes in the suburb, then you can kind of, you know, speed up the short distance relay and then have fiber in the backhaul. Look, I'm happy with fiber. I'm glad I didn't go for something like this.
Yeah.
But I love the technology, the fact that you can still utilize some of this older copper in the ground.
Yeah, it is a smart idea. My concern is that now that they've got this in their toolkit, my concern is that a lot of complexes are now going to say, well, just deploy this.
Do that rather.
Whereas fiber is still the better solution.
Oh yeah.
You might
be able
to get 100 meg over copper, but it's still copper. It's still old technology. Mm-hmm. It's still unreliable. It's and you're not going to get the same upload speeds, and probably not the same, just not the same.
It's not going to be as clean for sure. I mean, your latencies are going to be higher, most likely.
Probably. But you know, it's nice to have it in the toolkit. If I was Telkom, I probably wouldn't be punting this. I'd only punt this if there was an issue in deploying fiber inside a complex, for example. Because fiber is the technology you really want to deploy, because it's future proof.
But having said that, I think this you know, speaking about these complexes, you know, leafy suburbs where there's lots of money to pay for lots of data and stuff will obviously go for the fiber solution.
Yeah.
But the guy, you know, the kind of the lower LSM neighborhoods or those buildings where this will be rolled out, will those households actually be using 100 megs to begin with?
Because
would they pay for the data? I don't know. I mean, a lot of questions.
Indeed.
Still love the technology, but
No, it's cool to see Telkom doing interesting things, you know. And I think this is the direct result of all the competition they're facing in this market now for the first time. They've got real competition in the last mile in South Africa, and we saw that in their numbers reported this week, where we saw the number of broadband lines in service on Telkom's books actually go backwards, which suggests they're actually losing market share to the new guys. So they've got to play smart and defend their market share, and it's fantastic for consumers. The last item in news this week is the big Apple keynote, which I watched. Did you see it, Rehot? They made some interesting announcements. Quite a bit to talk about. Let's start with the new iOS. My first take on it was it's a major upgrade to iOS, particularly for iPad users, which I'm quite excited about because I'm still an iPad user. I think it's the only Apple product I still actively use. And it's quite a radical overhaul of iOS. It almost looks like they're making it more like a PC operating system.
Like a desktop-based operating system. I think they're aligning how the desktop operating system works versus the mobile operating system, which I think is a clever move.
Some interesting new stuff, like a dock, for example, a floating dock on iOS. I quite like the idea of that. Just a bunch of cool features, which I really like the look of. So that's only coming out though in the fall, which means our springtime. So around September, I guess they'll release it around the time of the next iPhone, usually late September-ish. So the new iOS probably coming out around the same time, maybe a couple of weeks before.
But again, most older Apple iPad users or mobile device users will still be able to make use of it, which is fantastic. You know, obviously going back, what I think to 2010 is.
Okay, that's quite cool. Yeah, I mean, there was an issue with those earlier iPads with especially those first generation ones. With every successive iOS update, they would get slower and slower and slower. Mm. So I hope that's not the case. I have an iPad Air 2. So by two or three year old technology now. My expectation is that it's still going to be silky smooth on this new iOS. I'd be disappointed if it slows down. HomePod, what do you make of HomePod?
Ooh, very interesting. I like the fact that it's a speaker first, which, you know, apparently the technology put in it for audio is what it's about, and then the technology to access Siri and those things over on top of it. I'm a big fan of the idea. I've never used the in-home assistant like that, so I guess we still need to get used to that kind of thing. But I'm a big fan of the Apple speaker. I mean, the iPod Hi-Fi, I still use it here every day in my house. It's a 10-year-old product. So if this thing is anything close to that with the Ada technology in terms of audio, I'd be very curious.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's quite a bit more pricey than the competition, the Google Home and the Amazon Echo. But then the speaker does seem to be of a higher quality. They really are punting the audio quality of this. One wonders whether the speaker was made by Beats. It was interesting that there was no Beats branding on it at all, and I wonder why that's the case, because, you know, they bought this audio company. Why not put the Beats branding on it? Why just use the Apple logo? But, you know, certainly I think the Beats brand is not looked on very favorably by audiophiles.
Exactly.
So maybe that was the decision. I think there's a growing realization, if I can call it that, in the market, that Beats headphones are not the sort of quality that you get from a Bose headset or something similar. That it's really more about the brand than the actual quality that you're getting. And I think that's perhaps a perception issue problem that Apple has. So that might have been the decision, even if this device was built by Beats, which I imagine it would have been. That's perhaps the reason I didn't call it Beats.
Maybe not. I don't know. I don't think. I think this is a little bit. For me, this is beyond Beats. You know, or it's bigger than Beats. You know, I don't think Beats is the kind of company. Maybe if you look at how this thing was constructed from the ground up, maybe Apple thought it would be better to keep it, you know, as an Apple first product. For a variety of reasons. I think it's a clever move if they did do it like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. I actually think this is going to do better for them than the Apple Watch. The Apple Watch, for me, never seemed like an utterly compelling product, like the iPhone was, like the iPad was. It wasn't something that I wanted to own. It wasn't something I wanted to rush out and get. I'd rather buy a Garmin sports watch, to be honest, than buy an Apple Watch. I find a sports watch just gives me a lot more functionality than I'd get out of an Apple Watch for the same price. But a smart speaker appeals to me a lot more. Now, if I was in the Apple ecosystem, if I was an iPhone user and a MacBook user and an iPad user, I'm only an iPad user. If I was in that Apple ecosystem, then this would certainly appeal to me because of just how cleanly it fits into that whole ecosystem.
Very much.
I'm keen to buy a smart speaker. I don't know if it'll be the Apple one. I'd probably lean away from getting the Apple one because I'm not very impressed with Siri. I haven't used Alexa on Amazon, but certainly Google's voice assistant is superior to Siri in terms of its ability to recognize my voice and in terms of its usefulness. So that would probably turn me against. So I think Apple probably has a lot of work to do on improving Siri in the next little while. But I'm in the market for one of these things, and I'll consider the Apple one. It may even come down to who brings these to South Africa first. None of them is available in South Africa yet.
I think you also want to look at other features. I mean, one of the things that's kind of disappointing about the HomePod, and I'm sure and I hope this will change, but it's the fact that it's not available with all music apps. So, for example, I can't use my Symphy Africa subscription. It's locked in. I don't even think they support Spotify at the moment, which is a big... Yeah. Shortcoming.
Another reason not to get it, because Apple's built a big walled garden here.
But for me, I'm in the ecosystem, so it's not as much as a hindrance.
Yeah.
But it's still something I will look at, you know, just for compatibility across the board, you know, especially if you want to change hardware.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely go for an open systems based approach here. I would choose a product that has been open to developers. And I know they are opening this to developers, but it'll still be Apple's walled garden. I'd like to be as a developer. As a consumer, I'd like to know that developers can, for example, change Siri to something else on that device. If you don't want to use Siri, you should be able to choose another option. And if I don't want to use Apple Music, if I want to be able to play my tunes through Google Play Music, for example, which I subscribe to, I want to be able to do that through the device. I do not want to be locked into Apple's music ecosystem.
Exactly. I think we need to look at devices like this, particularly the HomePod as example, that this is like, let's say, an iPad or an iPad without a screen that's built into a speaker. It's not a speaker first. It's this piece of technology that software runs on. Now, if you look at it like that, what has Apple done with their technology, their iPads? They've closed it up. I mean, obviously, there's a lot you can do if you go through the App Store or the iTunes Store, but it's still a closed ecosystem. Now, if somebody like Android were to develop a HomePod equivalent, that would be same technology, but open on a Android and maybe a broader ecosystem. That's where I would like to spend my money, something that you can, you know, play with the software on it, because it is, at the end of the day, just a PC or computer or iPad type device with speaker built around it. Then I think we're going to see some interesting developments. But that could also open it up for abuse, you know, hacking. You don't want a rogue speaker running in your house if you can't control the software. It could be a problem.
You just imagine a rogue speaker in your house.
I'm not talking about a Donald Trump-style speaker. Speaker of the house.
A speaker gone bad. You can just imagine this thing swearing at you. And hey, like you. What are you doing? Like a bad parrot swearing at you.
But I mean, if it isn't secured, I mean, yeah, you don't want people to listen in your conversation, which, you know, it is a real concern. It might not affect everybody, but I mean, if you are anybody, a celebrity or, you know, a pseudo rich person, you could be a target.
Yeah. And these things will get hacked. You can be sure the hackers are already working on them. Imagine the sort of juicy stuff you could get from listening into people's conversations. I heard Steve Ballmer, or I read about Steve Ballmer the other day, enthusing about the Amazon Echo and said he's got them all over his house. Now, I can imagine, you know, someone would love to listen into what Steve Ballmer talks about in his house. So, you do have to be a bit cautious about these things, I suppose.
Oh, definitely. But I think that's where I would bet more money on an Apple ecosystem, because it's got a track record of being more secure than many of its competitors.
Yeah, possibly.
The other thing that was interesting for me is also from the launch is macOS High Sierra, not the name so much, but the fact that the new file system, they're going to bring in Apple File System APFS, which is going to include, among other things, optimized support for solid-state drives, native encryption, crash protection, and for video editors like myself, the H.265, which is the 5K compression technology, will be built in, which will obviously will make it render times better, but also allow for smaller file sizes.
Okay.
I thought that was quite interesting. I'm looking forward to that one.
Interesting. Okay. When is that coming out?
Also at the end of the year, it should be after the next announcement, I think. There's a public beta, which I'm, for the first time in a long while, very excited about, to do a public beta on my work machine.
All right.
Which we'll do, I think, end of this month. They're going to launch it.
Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah. Living on the edge there, Rechot.
Living on the edge, yeah. But not as much on the edge as that new iMac.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word. Starting price of $5,000. So what we're looking, once it's imported with taxes and stuff, probably around 80,000 Rand.
Yeah, probably like that. Or you buy a software plane ticket, go over, buy it, and come back. I'm sure you can justify something like that.
Yeah, try and sneak that past customs or something.
Under your arm, yes. But, I mean, this is a beast. So it's a 5K Retina display. Processor options on this unit would include a 3.4 gigahertz or 3.5 gigahertz or 3.8 gigahertz quad core Intel i5 processor. But
i5.
The beast.
But this is the iMac, though. This isn't the iMac Pro.
Yeah, yeah, no, this is the normal one. But the beast will be the 4.5 gigahertz. No, yeah, on this on this level, the 4.5 gigahertz core i7 processor. Now, that Pro that we were talking about, oh, my word.
What's in that? What are the innards in that thing? It's like just Xeon processors or something.
Yeah, so now that one will have the 18-core processor that
Core
i9. Yeah, that's that beautiful thing. I think it'll have up to 128 gigabytes of RAM, upgradable too. It'll have, I'm just finding, I lost my page here. Obviously, it'll have a top-end graphics card.
Yeah,
sorry, man. I completely
and this is in the same. This is in the same form factor as the iMac.
Yeah, so
which is controversial.
We had a quick chat about this before the show. I mean, would you want everything built in? I'm not against the idea, but the problem comes in when you want to fix, when you want to repair or potentially upgrade. I could imagine that when the price drops on something like this, it could be, you know, a good option to go for. But at this price, I'd probably buy a complete specced out machine, PC-based machine, for half that price.
Indeed, I was just about to say, if you can buy get a desktop unit that isn't in that form factor, so that it is upgradable at a far lower cost.
Yeah,
why would
you
buy this thing?
Look, it's a beautiful device, and if you've got money to splash, like a lot of businesses and individuals do,
yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, you can't get anything, you know, classier than that, I guess. And if you have an office full of video editors working on this, you know, you've made it.
Yeah. But, no, indeed. Sure. I mean, the problem with the Mac Pro, the last Mac Pro that they introduced, was that it was this weird trash can shaped cylindrical thing that was almost impossible to upgrade. Isn't that professional design market looking for, I think they call it the cheese grater, aren't they looking for a desktop, what do they call it, a tower case type box that they can open up and slot in a new graphics card when the current one is starting to look a bit long in the tooth? You can't do that with this new machine, can you, unless you're using some sort of external graphics card?
Well, yes. So I've seen, and I can't find the link now, but there's definitely a external graphics card that's going to be available for the MacBooks. So, I mean, that is an option, but I don't think it's the solution that we're talking about here. Yes, a lot of designers and geeks like ourselves would prefer to go for a user upgradable device like the cheese grater.
Yeah.
But this is really the device I think Apple should have introduced when they did the trash can.
Yeah.
The trash can shouldn't have been a product. That should have been a concept, maybe. But this is a product they should have announced in place of that. And if they did it, the price would have been a lot more affordable now, I think. Yes, there would still be a high-end version with all those bells and whistles.
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, if I work in any design, video, AR, VR, any of those industries, I just want a machine that works, you know. Let me sit in front of it, let me do my work, get it done. It'll probably have to be specced out, so it'll be an expensive upfront investment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not too worried about upgrading. I mean, my iMac, my MacBook Pro is, 4 years old now. It was the highest end device that I could buy at the time, and it's still perfect for my needs now. So there was no need to upgrade anything. I'm happy with it. The next purchase I'll make is when there's a new model that comes along that I think would better my requirements for video editing and those kind of things. That's when I'll make a choice to upgrade again. It's not nice to have to spend this much money with each cycle, but I think in a lot of the IT tech space, this is what we've come accustomed to. You know, it's just instead of upgrading, you spend money on a new device, like a new car, every 4 to 5 years.
And this thing is almost the price of a small car if you spec it out. I'm actually on the Apple website now having a look at this thing, and it's insane. So it's actually the Xeon processor, 810 or 18-core Xeon processor from Intel. So turbo boost up to 4.5 gigahertz, up to 42 megabytes of cache, Vega graphics.
22 teraflops of GPU performance, which is quite a bit.
16 gigabytes of high bandwidth memory, up to 400 gigabytes per second memory bandwidth. See, they're pitching this as a virtual reality platform, up to 128 gig of RAM, DDR4 2.6 gigahertz RAM, up to a 4 terabyte SSD. My word. No, this is a beast. I'd love to know how much it would cost if you do spec it out to the max with the 128 gig of RAM, the 4 terabyte SSD, etc.
It'll be well over 100,000 Rand, definitely.
Oh, easily. I think you will actually be putting this into the price of a small car.
But you touched on something interesting now. You mentioned it really is built for VR, and that's I think also is really where Apple is going with this. This isn't a machine for your magazine designer or the guy that designs websites. This is for somebody who at a very high end level, I think, is going to go into the AR development, which contains everything from graphics to video to audio. This has to be a machine for them because they are going to be pushing that technology on the next revision of their iPhone, the iPhone 8. We've seen some demos that they did, I saw after WWDC with a software that they've launched or that they're going to be launching that makes easy for developers to create AR virtual reality worlds or AR worlds. And it'll make sense for them to then have a machine to back it up. You know, if you want to develop for our system and get the best out of that. You know, here's a machine you can do it on.
Yeah, yeah. But still very, very expensive technology. No doubt this technology will be in the standard iMac in, give it 3 or 4 years' time. So you are at the bleeding edge here, I suppose, and paying for the privilege thereof. It must be an amazing machine. I look forward to maybe taking a stroll down to the local iStore and having a look at it at some point.
Yes, when it comes out, definitely.
Yeah. So I think that's our news this week, as I try and find out what I've done with my show notes. There they are. Let's move on to our regular features. Winner and loser this week. Our loser this week is ETV, for obvious reasons. They lost the court case against Faith Mutambi. They've also been dragging out this digital migration process for years now over this encryption thing. Handed it to them in this judgment. The justice is actually quite critical of ETV, suggesting even that they're trying to take advantage of government policy for their own commercial interests. So ETV is our loser of the week. And our winner this week is Elon Musk, for the reason that Tesla, his electric car company, is now worth more than BMW.
Yeah, that was fantastic news.
What an achievement. I mean, his company is nanoscale next to BMW. He produces only 80,000 cars a year, and BMW obviously much bigger than that. I don't have the number with me in terms of the number of vehicles they manufacture, but their orders of magnitude bigger than that. But certainly the market is anticipating big things from Mr. Musk.
Oh, yeah.
And he has overtaken BMW now to become the fourth most valuable car maker in the world.
I mean, that's a scary thought, because how many countries is Tesla available in versus the countries that BMW is available in?
Indeed.
And how many cars do BMW have on the road? And how many cars does Tesla have on the road?
Indeed.
That's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal. But I suppose it could be argued that there's a bubble in the stock. Certainly wouldn't be buying Tesla shares at the current valuation. There's a lot of hubris and a lot of... let's call it expectation built into that share price. I wouldn't be surprised to see it coming back a bit at some point. But certainly, I mean, larger than BMW in terms of market value is quite an achievement.
Phenomenal.
What's your pick this week, Richard?
So it's my turn to do an audiobook pick. I'm a fan of audible.com. Last week I read or listened to a book called The Professor and the Madman, written by Simon Winchester. And it's a very interesting story about one of the most prolific contributors to the English Oxford Dictionary. And it also has a bit of a story about how the English Oxford Dictionary came to be. It's quite fascinating if you're a writer, because it kind of gives you some insight into, you know, the thinking behind why such a thing was ever needed, you know, and people and what a mammoth task it was. Simply to get, you know, every word explained and referenced in every piece of literature available between, I think, it was 16th century upwards. I couldn't stop playing it. It was a fantastic read. I would highly recommend it, either the real book or the audible version, The Professor and the Madman.
Sounds great. I'm gonna check that out. Although the number of titles I've got backing up on my Audible at the moment is a bit frightening. I've been listening to so many other podcasts. I don't seem to find time to get to my Audible. So I've actually been thinking of cancelling my Audible, because I just don't get to. The problem is I've got about 4 or 5 credits owing to me, and you know you can't accumulate more than 5 credits.
Yeah.
So I've got to use up those credits before I cancel my subscription, because if you cancel your subscription, you lose your credits.
But you keep your books.
But you have to use your credits, otherwise you lose them.
Yes. But just get some books, just buy them, keep them aside, and then when the time comes.
And then resubscribe later.
Resubscribe, cancel every few months.
Because it is quite expensive. It is quite expensive. I think it was about 220 rand a month at the current exchange rate. So if you're not using it all the time, it is a pricey product to have to pay for every month. I think that's a good strategy. Maybe subscribe for 6 months of the year, bulletin credits, and cancel for the second 6 months. I've got so much backed up, including that the sequel to that, my last audiobook pick, which was that book about Bob, That sci-fi novel, the Bobbyverse, fantastic first book, and I still need to get cracking on the second one, which I believe is very good. And a shout out to Adam, who mails me from time to time about the podcast. He had a listen to that audible, and he's listened to the second book, and he says it's well worth it.
Next on my list too. So
Adam, I'm going to get to it soon, but I'm afraid don't expect any more audiobook picks from me for a while, because I have a lot of catching up on other things I need to do, including that new book in the Bobbyverse series. That, I think, is our... No, I need to give my pick. My pick this week is, as I lean over to get the name of it, is the Jabra Elite Sport. Last year I reviewed the a similar product from Jabra, but it was it's a Bluetooth wireless sports headset. For listening to music or podcasts, etc. Last year, I reviewed one that had a cable that linked the earpieces that you kind of put behind your neck. It worked well. Sometimes that cable got a little bit annoying because it was bouncing around as you ran, for example. This is the new product from Jabra. It's called the Elite Sport, and it's completely wireless. So you literally plug the little speaker into each ear, connected wirelessly to your phone, and that's it. Off you go.
Nice.
The biggest trick is it's got a lot of little earpiece goodies that come in the box, and you have to try all of them to get the right fit for you. So in terms of the setup, you have to have a bit of patience, and I'm quite an impatient person, and I got a bit frustrated because I certainly don't like to read manuals, and so I was trying to figure this all out myself and getting increasingly frustrated. So the first trick is, if you decide to get this product, and it's a great product, by the way, then just have a bit of patience when you open the box. Read the little manual that comes with it. Don't do what I did and try and figure it out yourself. It's actually quite easy once you get the hang of it. And once you've got the little goodies attached, these little earpieces fit very snugly in your ear, and there's no chance of them falling out. Even if you have a tumble on the trails, for example, like I often do, they'll stay snugly attached to your ear, provided you've found the right fit for you. It's a cool product. It comes in a little case which has an integrated battery.
This sounds very familiar. This sounds like the Apple Pods, the new Pods.
Yes,
charging case.
They compete directly with that, and indeed, they've got their little charging case, just like the what are the Apple ones called? EarPods, I think.
EarPods.
So they're very similar to that. They're designed for sports, so they've got a guarantee on them that they won't get damaged as you sweat while doing exercise. They're not cheap. They're about 3,500 rand. So they're also in that sort of same price range as the Apple product. But Jabra, well known, I think they're a Danish company. And they produce good quality products. Not cheap. But if you're looking for a truly wireless system, obviously you still need to run with your phone, but if you're looking for a truly wireless system, Bluetooth based, that'll allow you to listen to music or catch up on podcasts like this one while you're doing exercise, gymming or running, or whatever it is you like to do, then they're worth having a look at. But I think available through a number of retail outlets like Incredible Connection. They're called the Jabra Elite Sport, worth checking out. About 3,500.
Nice. And did you try the in-ear heart rate monitor on that?
I haven't yet. I'm going to do a full review of this product, though, in the coming weeks, so look out for that.
Yeah. I'd like to see that.
But yeah, it's got an in-ear heart rate monitor. I do find, though, that on these products, you can have them give you all sorts of audio feedback as you're going, telling you how your running is going, whether you should be running faster, telling you every so often what your heart rate is, all that sort of thing. I tend to find it a bit annoying after a while because, you know, I'm trying to listen to a podcast. I'm enjoying the album I'm listening to, and every 30 seconds you're getting interrupted saying your heart rate is 160 beats a minute and you should be running a little bit faster than you are, you know. It's like, shut up. I'm trying to listen to this podcast, you know, go away. So what I end up actually doing is switching off a lot of those things. But I can understand that, professional athletes want to know exactly what their heart rate is at any given moment would welcome that sort of feedback. But personally, as a sort of weekend runner, I'm not trying to be a performance athlete, so I don't necessarily need all of that feedback. So I tend to go into the app and switch it all off, and then just use it to listen to music or listen to whatever podcast I want to listen to. But it's a cool product, if you're if you're looking for something that's completely wireless, and let's face it, having a wired headset while you're running is a pain. The wires get tangled, they get in the way, especially on a longer run. It gets really irritating after a while. So I haven't done a long run with these yet, but I'm planning to soon. So I still need to determine just how comfortable they are, you know, on a 20 or 25K run. But they feel pretty comfortable, you know, for short distances so far. But look out for the full review. We'll have that up in the next couple of weeks. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. We just need to do our quiz answers. Let me do the first question. Which two companies bought into Stellenbosch InfoSec company Entersect this week? And the answers to that are, is Rand Merchant Investment Holdings through Alpha Code, which is that fintech hub that they've created in Sandton, and Nedbank Private Equity.
The second question, IBIS and Broadlink parent WBS has a new name. What is it? And the answer there is Rain. Very descriptive.
Yeah, nice name.
Nice name, yeah.
Certainly memorable. The third question in the quiz this week, the answer to question two is building a wireless broadband network using which technology? The answer to that is LTE Advanced.
The fourth question, which telecommunications operator is the new headline sponsor for the Springboks? And for a bonus point, what is the sponsorship period? And if you watched the game last night, the answer is MTN, and it's for 3 years.
3 years. It was a good game. It started a bit slowly, but I enjoyed the second half. We did well. And our last question in the quiz this week, Apple has unveiled a new smart speaker for the home. What's it called? And the answer is HomePod. And that's our show this week. As always, if you've got any feedback, our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Rachel and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.